Dope with me, Miss Private, and we'll sail around the world. I will be off Adamant, and you my wayward girl. Many nights of talking in hotel rooms can you take? Many nights of limping round on pagan holidays. Oh, elope with me in private, and we'll set something ablaze. A trail for the devil to erase. San Francisco's calling us, the Giants and Mets will play. Piazza, New York, catch your eye, you straight or are you gay? We hung about the stadium, we got no place to stay. We hung about the Tenderloin, and tenderly you tell about the saddest book you ever read. It always makes you cry, the statue's crying too, and Willie May. I love you, I have a drowning grip on your adoring face. I love you, my responsibility has found a place. Beside you when strong warnings in the guise of gentle words come wave upon me from the family, why then let absurd. You'll take care of her, I know it, you will do a better job. Maybe, but not what she deserves. Elope with me, Miss Private, and we'll drink ourselves awake. We'll taste the coffee houses and award certificates. A privy seal to keep the feel of 1960s style. We'll comment on the decor and we'll help the passerby. And the dusk when we're...
Hello everyone, this is Allie and Quinn on the Willow Tree Theater on air. Our name on Spinatron isn't changed yet, but yeah, and you are listening to 91.5 FM WFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. This is songwriter Lucinda Williams. We're going to be reading a radio play soon. In about 5 minutes we'll start that, so enjoy the music until then.
It's been a while. Please don't make me show I'm not your gal. Don't you think I know you're only trying to save yourself? Don't you think I know you're only trying to save
Thank you. cuts my face? And whose skin is this? And whose neighborhood? Where's my mom? Where are my sisters? Where's my pa? Where's my baby? I'm flying on my Roman commander, just like that night when we snuck out lay by the creek, so sweet for hours, for hours. I got that itch, I got it back, and it feels, it feels so good to burn it. In scalding water. With reckless cycling, I'm flying.
So fine, through the bumps of time in your prime. Then you, people call, say beware doll, you're bound to fall. You thought they were all kidding you. You used to laugh about everybody that was hanging out. Now you don't talk so loud. Now you don't seem so proud about having to be scrounging your next lonely, but you know you only used to get juiced in it. Nobody's ever taught you how to live out on the street, and now you're gonna have to get used to it. You say you never compromise with a mystery tramp, but now you realize he's not selling any alibis as you stare into the vacuum of his eyes and say, do you want to make a deal? How does it feel? How does it feel to be on your that it ain't no good. You shouldn't let other people get your kicks for you. You used to ride on a chrome horse with your diplomat, who carried on his shoulder a Siamese cat. Ain't it hard when you discover that he really wasn't where it's at? Gifts, but you better take your diamond ring, you better pawn it, babe. You used to be so amused at Napoleon in rags and the language that he used. Go to him now, he calls you, you can't refuse. When you ain't got nothing, you got nothing to lose. You're invisible now, you got no secrets to conceal. And your father to your sister, he explains that you're tired of yourself and all of your creations.
Hello, hello. This is Quinn from the Willow Tree Theater on Air. We're having some troubles with our mics right now. But I'm going to read a PSA. Under new federal law, tobacco manufacturers can no longer make cigarettes labeled or advertised as light, low, or mild. Many smokers mistakenly believe that these products cause fewer health problems than other cigarettes. Put out the myth. No matter what they look, smell, taste, or taste like, all cigarettes are harmful to your health. There is no such thing as a safe cigarette. Please quit today. For help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit www.smokefree.gov. Allie's microphone is still not working. We'll bring back some Bob Dylan for the time. Queen Jane.
Have died in battle or in vain, and you're sick of all this repetition. Won't you come see me, Queen Jane?
Actually working? I can hear myself too. I just had to press things over and over again to be able to do it.
Can you right? Yes.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Awesome.
Oh my god.
Yay.
Wow. The world is so beautiful sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Things mm-hmm. just work out.
Exactly. Okay. Well, I guess that's enough of Like a Rolling Stone. It's a very long song. Yeah. Oh wait, this is Queen Jane approximately. Moved on. All right.
Yeah, we're going to read a short radio play. We might not get through all of it, but...
We're going to read some of a... It's more of a short story, isn't it?
Yeah, short story. Yeah. Originally a short story by Ray Bradbury, one of my favorite science fiction authors. It's called Kaleidoscope.
Yeah. And I'm gonna be the narrator, and Quinn's going to do every single other role, but in... funny voices, maybe.
Yes, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll see. This is a trial. first one of the semester. There'll be no background music.
No.
This is just
bare bones.
Us writing a story, like. So, Kaleidoscope by Ray Bradbury. The first concussion cut the rocket up the side with a giant can opener. The men were thrown into space like a dozen wriggling silverfish. They were scattered into a dark sea, and the ship, in a million pieces, went on, a meteor swarm seeking a lost son.
Barkley! Barkley, where are you?
The sound of voices calling like lost children on a cold night.
Wood! Wood!
Captain! Hollis! Hollis! This is Stone! Stone!
Stone, this is Hollis! Where are you?
I don't know! How can I? Which way is up? I'm falling! Good God, I'm falling!
They fell. They fell as pebbles fall down wells. They were scattered as jackstones are scattered from a gigantic throw. And now, instead of men, there were only voices. All kinds of voices, disembodied and impassioned, in varying degrees of terror and resignation.
We're going away from each other!
This was true. Hollis, swinging head over heels, knew this was true. He knew it with a vague acceptance. They were parting to go their separate ways, and nothing could bring them back. They were wearing their sealed tight spacesuits with the glass tubes over their pale faces, but they hadn't had time to lock on their force units. With them, they could be small lifeboats in space, saving themselves, saving others, collecting together, finding each other until they were an island of men with some plan. But without the force units strapped onto their shoulders, they were meteors, senseless, each going to a separate and irrevocable fate. A period of perhaps 10 minutes elapsed while the first terror died and a metallic calm took its place. Space began to weave its strange voices in and out, on a great dark loom, crossing, recrossing, making a final pattern.
Stone to Hollis, how long can we talk by phone?
Depends how fast you're going, and which way I'm going, and which way I'm going.
An hour I'd make it.
That should do it,
said Hollis, abstracted and quiet.
What happened?
Said Hollis, a minute later.
The rocket blew up, that's all. Rockets do blow up.
Which way are you going?
Looks like I'll hit the moon.
It's Earth for me. Back to old Mother Earth at 10,000 miles an hour. I'll burn like a match.
Hollis thought of it with a queer abstraction of mind. He seemed to be removed from his body, watching it fall down and down through space, as objective as he had been in regard to the first falling snowflakes of a winter season long ago. The others were silent, thinking of the destiny that had brought them to this. Falling, falling, and nothing they could do to change it. Even the captain was quiet, for there was no command or plan that he knew could put things back together again.
Oh, it's a long way down. Oh, if it's a long way down. Long, long way down. Oh, I don't want to die. I don't want to die if it's a long way down.
Who's that?
I don't know.
Simpson, I think. Simpson, is that you? Oh, it's a long way down. I don't like it. Oh, good God, I don't like it.
Stimson, this is Hollis. Stimson, you hear me?
A pause while they fell separate from one another.
Stimson?
He replied at last.
Yes.
Stimson, take it easy. We're all in the same fix.
I don't want to be here. I want to be somewhere else.
Well, there's a chance we'll be found.
I must be,
said Stimson.
I don't believe this. I don't believe any of this is happening.
It's a bad dream,
said someone.
Shut up,
said Hollis.
Come make me,
said the voice. It was Applegate. He laughed easily and with a similar objectivity.
Come and shut me up.
Hollis, for the first time, felt the impossibility of his situation. A great anger filled him, for he wanted more than anything at this moment to be able to do something to Applegate. He had wanted for many years to do something, and now it was too late. Applegate was only a telephonic voice. Falling, falling, falling. Now, as if they had discovered the horror, two of the men began to scream. In a nightmare, Hollis saw one of them float by, very near, screaming and screaming.
Stop it!
The man was almost at his fingertips, screaming insanely. He would never stop. He would go on screaming for a million miles as long as he was in radio range, disturbing all of them, making it impossible for them to talk to one another. Hollis reached out. It was best this way. He made the extra effort and touched the man. He grasped the man's ankle and pulled himself along the body until he reached the head. The man screamed, and clawed frantically like a drowning swimmer. The screaming filled the universe. One way or the other, thought Hollis, the moon or earth or meteors will kill him, so why not now? He smashed the man's glass mask with his iron fist. The screaming stopped. He pushed off from the body and let it spin away on its own course, falling. Falling, falling down space, Hollis and the rest of them went into the long, endless dropping and whirling of silence.
Hollis, are you still there?
Hollis did not speak, but felt the rush of heat in his face.
This is Applegate again. All right, Applegate. Let's talk. We haven't had anything else to do.
The captain cut in.
That's enough of that. We've got to figure out a way out of this. Captain, why don't you shut up?
Said Applegate.
What? You heard me, Captain. Don't play your rank on me. You're 10,000 miles away by now. And let's not kid ourselves. As Stimson puts it, it's a long way down.
See here, Applegate.
Gannet, this is a mutiny of one. I haven't a damn thing to lose. Your ship was a bad ship, and you're a bad captain, and I hope you break when you hit the moon.
I'm ordering you to stop.
Go on, order me again.
Applegate smiled across 10,000 miles. The captain was silent. Applegate continued.
Where were we, Hollis? Oh, yes, I can remember. I hate you too, but you know that. You've known it for a long time.
Hollis clenched his fists, helplessly.
Well, I want to tell you something,
said Applegate.
Make you happy. I was the one who blackballed you with this rocket company 5 years ago.
A meteor flashed by. Hollis looked down and his left hand was gone. Blood spurted. Suddenly there was no air in his suit. He had enough air in his lungs to move his right hand over and twist a knob at his left elbow, tightening the joint and sealing the leak. It had happened so quickly that he was not surprised. Nothing surprised him anymore. The air in the suit came back to normal. In an instant now, that leak sealed, and the blood that had flowed so swiftly was pressured as he fastened the knob yet tighter until it made a tourniquet. All of this took place in a terrible silence on his part. And the other men chatted. That one man, Laspierre, went on and on and on with his talk about his wife on Mars, his wife on Venus, his wife on Jupiter, his money, his wondrous times, his drunkenness, his gambling, his happiness, on and on while they all fell. Laspierre reminisced on the past, happy, while he fell to his death. It was so very odd. Space, thousands of miles of space, and those voices vibrating in the center of it. No one visible at all, and only the radio waves quivering and trying to quicken other men into emotion.
You angry, Hollis? No.
And he was not. The abstraction had returned, and he was a thing of dull concrete, forever falling nowhere.
You wanted to get to the top of all your life, Hollis. You always wondered what happened, if I put the black mark on you just before I was tossed out myself. That isn't important,
said Hollis. And it was not. It was gone. When life is over, it is just like a flicker of bright film, an instant on the screen, all of its prejudices and passions condensed and illuminated for an instant on space, and before you could cry out,
there was one happy day, there a bad one, there an evil face, there a good one.
The film burned to a cinder. The screen went dark. From this outer edge of his life, looking back, there was only one remorse, and that was only that he had wished to go on living. Did all dying people feel this way, as if they had never lived? Did life seem short, indeed, over and done before you took a breath? Did it seem this abrupt and impossible to everyone, or only himself, here and now, with a few hours left to him for thought and deliberation? One of the other men, Laspierre, was talking.
Well, I had me a good time. I had a wife on Mars, Venus, and Jupiter. Each one of them had money and treated me swell. I got drunk once and I gambled away $20,000.
But you're here now, thought Hollis. I didn't have any of those things. When I was living, I was jealous of you, Laspierre. When I had another day ahead of me, I envied you, your woman, and your good times. Women frightened me, and I went into space, always wanting them and jealous of you for having them, and money and as much happiness as you could have in your own wild way. But now, falling here, with everything over, I'm not jealous of you anymore, because if it's over for you as it is for me, and right now, if it's like it never was. Hollis craned his face forward and shouted into the telephone.
It's all over, Laspierre.
Silence.
It's just as if it never was, Laspierre. Who's that?
Laspierre's faltering voice.
This is Hollis.
He was being mean. He felt the meanness, the senseless meanness of dying. Applegate had hurt him. Now he wanted to hurt another. Applegate and space had both wounded him.
You're out here, Laspierre. It's all over. It's all just as if it had never happened, isn't it?
No.
Well, when anything's over, it's just like it never happened. Where's your life any better than mine now? Now is what counts. Is it any better, is it?
Yeah, it's better.
How?
Well, because I got my thoughts. I remember.
Cried Laspierre, far away, indignant, holding his memories to his chest with both hands. And he was right. With a feeling of cold water rushing through his head and body, Hollis knew he was right. There are differences between memories and dreams. He had only dreams of things he wanted to do, while Laspierre had memories of things done and accomplished. And this knowledge began to pull Hollis apart with a slow, quivering precision.
What good does it do you?
He cried to Laspierre.
Now, when a thing's over and it's not good anymore, you're no better off than I.
I'm resting easy,
said Laspierre.
I've had my turn. I'm not getting mean at the end like you.
Mean?
Hollis turned the word on his tongue. He had never been mean as long as he could remember in his life. He had never dared to be mean. He must have saved it all these years for such a time as this. Mean, he rolled the word into the back of his mind. He felt tears starting in his eyes and roll down his face. Someone must have heard his gasping voice.
Take it easy, Hollis.
It was, of course, ridiculous. Only a minute before, he'd been giving advice to others, to Stimson. He had felt a braveness which he had thought to be the genuine thing, and now he knew that it had been nothing but shock and the objectivity possible in shock. Now he was trying to pack a lifetime of suppressed emotion into an interval of minutes.
I know how you feel, Hollis,
said Lespierre, now 20,000 miles away, his voice fading.
I don't take it personally.
But aren't we equal, he wondered, Lespierre and I, here, now? If a thing's over, if it's done, what good is it? You die anyways. But he knew he was rationalizing, for it was like trying to tell the difference between a live man and a corpse. There was a spark in one and not in the other, an aura, a mysterious element. So it was with Lespierre and himself. Lespierre had lived a good, full life, and it made him a different man now. And he, Hollis, had been as good as dead for many years. They came to death by separate paths, and, in all likelihood, if there are lands of death, their kind would be as different as night from day. The quality of death, like that of life, must be an infinite variety. And if one has already died once, then what was there to look for in dying for good and all, as he was now? It was a second later that he discovered his right foot was cut sheer away. It almost made him laugh. The air was gone from his suit again. He bent quickly, and there was blood, and the meteorite taken flesh and suit away to the ankle. Oh, death in space was most humorous. They cut you away, piece by piece, like a black, invisible butcher. He tightened the valve at the knee, his head whirling in pain, fighting to remain aware, and with the valve tightened, the blood retained, the air kept, he straightened on and went falling, falling, falling for all that there was left to do.
Hollis.
Hollis nodded sleepily, tired of waiting for death.
It's Applegate again,
said the voice.
Yes. I've had time to think. I listened to you. This isn't good. It makes us bad. This is a bad way to die. It brings all the bile out. You listening, Hollis? Yes. You know, I lied a minute ago. I lied. I didn't blackball you. I don't know why I said that. I guess I wanted to hurt you. You seemed like the one to hurt. You know, we've always fought. I guess I'm getting old fast and repenting fast. And I guess listening to you be mean made me a little bit ashamed. Whatever the reason, I want you to know I was an idiot too. There's not an ounce of truth in what I said. To hell with you.
Hollis felt his heart begin to work again. It seemed as if it hadn't worked for 5 minutes, but now all of his limbs began to take color and warmth. The shock was over, and the successive shocks of anger and terror and loneliness were passing. He felt like a man emerging from a cold shower in the morning, ready for breakfast and a new day.
Thanks, Applegate. Don't mention it. Up your nose, you person. Hey,
said Stone.
What?
Hollis called across space, for Stone, of all of them, was a good friend.
Hell, I've got myself into a meteor swarm. Some little asteroids.
Meteors?
Oh, I think it's the Merodian cluster. That goes out past Mars and towards Earth once every 5 years. I'm right in the middle. It's like a big kaleidoscope. You got all kinds of colors, shapes, and sizes. Oh, God, it's beautiful, all that metal.
Silence.
I'm going with him,
said Stone.
They're taking me off with them. I'll be damned.
He laughed. Hollis looked to see, but saw nothing. There were only the great diamonds and sapphires and emerald mists and velvet inks of space, with God's voice mingling among the crystal fires. There was a kind of wonder and imagination in the thought of Stone going off into the meteor swarm, out past Mars for years, and coming in towards Earth every 5 years, passing in and out of the planet's ken for the next million centuries. Stone and the Meribdon cluster, eternal and unending, shifting and shaping like the kaleidoscope colors when you were a child, and held the long tube to the sun and gave it a twirl.
So long, Hollis.
Stone's voice, very faint now.
So long. Good luck,
shouted Hollis across 30,000 miles.
Don't be funny,
said Stone, and was gone. The stars closed in. Now all the voices were fading, each on his own trajectory, some to Mars, others into further space, and Hollis himself, he looked down. He, of all the others, was going back to Earth alone.
So long.
Take it easy.
So long, Hollis.
That was Applegate. The many goodbyes, the short farewells, and now the great loose brain was disintegrating. The components of the brain, which had worked so beautifully and efficiently in the skull case of the rocket ship firing through space, were dying, one by one. The meaning of their life together was falling apart. And as a body dies when the brain ceases functioning, so was the spirit of the ship and their long time together, and what they meant to one another was dying. Applegate was now no more than a finger blown from the parent body, no longer to be despised and worked against. The brain was exploded, and the senseless, useless fragments of it were far scattered. The voices faded, and now all of space was silent. Hollis was alone, falling. They were all alone. Their voices had died like echoes of the words of God spoken and vibrating in the star deep. There went the captain to the moon, there Stone with the meteor swarm, there Stimson, there Applegate towards Pluto, there Smith and Turner and Underwood and all the rest, the shards of the kaleidoscope that had formed a thinking pattern for so long, hurled apart. And I, thought Hollis, what can I do? Is there anything I can do now to make up for a terrible and empty life? If only I could do one good thing to make up for all the meanness I collected all these years and didn't even know was in me. But there's no one here but myself, and how can you do good all alone? You can't. Tomorrow night, I'll hit Earth's atmosphere. I'll burn, he thought, and be scattered in ashes all over the continental lands. I'll be put to use just a little bit, but ashes are ashes and they'll add to the land. He fell swiftly like a bullet, like a pebble, like an iron weight, objective, objective all of the time now. Not sad or happy or anything, but only wishing he could do a good thing now that everything was gone. A good thing for just himself to know about. When I hit the atmosphere, I'll burn like a meteor.
I wonder,
he said.
I wonder if anyone will see me.
A small boy on the country road looked up and screamed,
Look, Mom! Look! A falling star!
The blazing white star fell down the sky of dust in Illinois.
Make a wish,
said his mother.
Make a wish.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Again, that was Kaleidoscope by Ray Bradbury. Mm-hmm. I'm Allie.
I'm Quinn.
And you're listening to the Willow Tree Theater on air. And
on WMFO at 91.5
FM, WMFO, Medford Toast Freeform Radio.
Tune in. Next week when we maybe will be doing the time machine.
Are we going to do the time machine next week?
Yeah.
All right, we'll have more
or
people.
Something.
There'll be more voices other than ours. Mm-hmm.
Maybe some music and sounds.
That would be so awesome. Let's see if we can get on top of it enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Now we have...
What's your name?
Zoe.
Zoe.
With what's your show name?
Sing It for the Teenagers.
And you're on AUX 2. And the music will start whenever you press play.